Welcome to No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, and Bob Page, both of whom are in Florida, but with us nonetheless.
One of whom has enough common sense to live in Florida.
Yes, you're right.
The other of whom is just visiting and has to go back to the tundra, where I read in the Detroit news this morning, as we tape this on Monday, all-time record low on Detroit, 9 degrees today.
Is it? Oh, I didn't know that. All-time
for
this
day? That's what the Detroit news said Monday morning.
Yeah. Well, it soared into the 30s yesterday, or the high 20s. It was balmy and sunny, I thought was very, very
soared.
Nice. And quickly, before we introduce the show, so you're down in Florida selling memorabilia in Lakeland?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been to Tiger Town since Friday. And visiting with some of the guys and their wives and what have you, and had a great time. I mean, Saturday was just you just couldn't believe how many people showed up for the show. It was incredible. And
was anybody signing besides you?
Today and tomorrow.
Was it you or anybody else signing? Was it a bunch of guys? Just you?
Just me.
No
just
kidding.
Me. And it just was. We signed from 11 o'clock on Saturday till 4:30, which is about a half hour after the game ended. That's how long we signed. The line never stopped. I don't know why, but maybe somebody started a rumor that I had died or I was getting ready to die or something.
Okay.
But that's what it
felt
like.
The line never stopped because you're a nice person. And anybody who goes through the line going to talk to you, you're going to talk to them, smile, kibitz a little bit, as opposed to these jerks like Reggie Jackson who refused to even look up at anybody coming through the line. That's why it took so damn long. Why don't you stop being such a nice, accommodating person next time? Be a little bit of a prick. And just move the line, all right? You'll make more money that
Bob,
way.
So I was with him.
You want me to be you?
I was with him. I was with him signing the book we wrote in 2006 or 7, whatever it was. We were in Hershey, Pennsylvania, double-A team. And a couple of guys would glom onto him, and I'd say, Teddy, get rid of him. You can't suffer these fools. And he would continue to talk. Finally, I just walked away and said, you want to talk to these jerk-offs, go ahead. Anyway.
You know, I've changed my mind. We were talking before we got the show. We got a couple of guys sending emails to the show. You can send the emails and we'll use your questions if we think they're good. Some guy writes in today and he says, he wants to know who the toughest hitters Denny ever faced was. Man, that's a 45-minute answer with this guy. Let's not use that on the show.
We'll get to that later.
That wasn't the question. The question was, who did I prefer a certain catcher?
That was part of the question.
That was another question. Let's not go there. Okay. That's 40 minutes.
let's say who we are, where we are. You can reach us with these death-defying questions at 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS, or you can write to us at asknofilter@gmail.com. We are part of a network. We are in Drew Lane's basement. Drew Lane with the Drew and Mike podcast, the number one podcast in Michigan and probably top 10 in America with hundreds of thousands of listeners every week. And Drew has lent us his facility. We're part of what we're building here called the Red Shovel Network because he's got an ugly red shovel in his front yard that he refuses to throw away. And also a chart of the Duffels.
Well, he needs it every morning with the 8 inches of snow each night. What are you talking about?
Anyway, we're proud.
And if you're talking about being in Drew Lane's basement, let's not BS people. Drew Lane's basement is probably 4,000 square feet.
No, it isn't. No, he lives in a very modest home in Ferndale, Michigan. Very modest, and this is in the basement, and it's not. It's cramped, but it's got great equipment. That's why my voice sounds so smooth and mellifluous.
It's the first time in your life.
Yeah, first time. And it's very comfortable down there. It's nice temperature, nice everything. We got
candy
bars.
Come see it when it's safe to come back home to Detroit May 1st. Then I'll come see it personally.
Three more months.
Anyway, very not surprising because he's 93 years old, but Detroit here is, at least the sports world, and I think well beyond that, mourning the loss of terrible Ted Lindsay, who was anything but terrible, as you know, a complete gentleman and a hero in so many ways. I never saw him play in Detroit. I saw him on TV in the old six-team NHL. But a guy who did it all, tirelessly tried to start the union and was successful. Won four championships. Just a great, great man. Any quick thoughts, Bob? You followed him as a kid growing up. Thoughts about Ted Lindsay?
Well, here's the thing about Ted Lindsay. The only guy who really would have seen him in his prime is the guy sitting right here with us, Denny McClain, because Denny's from Chicago, and after the 57 season, he was traded to the Blackhawks. Unfortunately, Denny was not a hockey guy growing up. My guess is you never saw him play. I remember one year that he came back, 1964, and I saw him play a lot in 64. He was 39 years old at the time. He only scored 14 goals that year, and I remember thinking, well, you know, he's a good player, and it's thrilling to actually be able to watch Ted Lindsay play, but he wasn't special anymore. But when he played, he was special. Would Ted Lindsay have been as great a player in the NHL of today? Got nothing to do with his size, because there are a lot of smaller guys, Patrick Kane, whatever, who are big stars in the NHL today, Johnny Hockey, people like that. But the thing about Lindsay is the kind of game he played, it just wouldn't fly in the NHL today. The stick swinging, the sticks, all that kind of stuff, they don't even fight much in the NHL. So Ted Lindsay wouldn't have been quite the player he was had he played today in his prime.
And excuse me, I got to meet him maybe even better than all of us watching him play. I probably appeared at 20, 30, 40 card shows with him and shows like that. He was a gracious guy always. He always had an extra moment. He was kind. He was giving. He spent a lot of time in his foundation. And, you know, I saw examples of how good he was. He'd stop for kids that's going out the door. He'd sign one, and all of a sudden there'd be 10 more kids. And by the way, these are people that didn't pay for the autograph. Now the show was over. He would sit there or stand there and sign another 10 or 12 autographs for people who did not pay in. And the promoter never had any problem with it. You know, he was a little 5'8 guy full of dynamite, what they call him, Mr. Rough and Tumble.
Terrible Ted Lindsay. They call him old Scarface, too.
And when they asked him, why are you so tough for being a little guy, and he says, why do you have so many fights? And he says, you knock everybody down every time you have a fight. He says, well, I found out a long time ago that big guys fall further than little guys.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I found disturbing today that you guys haven't thought of, and I bet nobody else has thought of either.
I have.
Bill McGraw wrote a great article, a great piece about Lindsay in the Detroit Free Press today. I didn't see in Billy's piece, or Ted Kolfan, who was a one-time PA on my TV show back in Detroit, the Wings beat writer, nobody got a single quote from the last of the Mohicans, Alex Delvecchio. Yeah. And I hope that Alex is okay. I don't know anything about it. I hope he's able to talk to people. But Alex is the last one left, man. Everybody's gone now. You know, Gord's gone. Sawchuk died 100 years ago.
Gordy just 2 years ago.
We've lost Gadsby. You know, we've lost Marcel Pronovo. We lost all those great players. And Alex is about the last one left.
You know,
let me add one other person who died this past weekend, Lulu Harwell.
I didn't see that.
She died Friday, 99 years old. The one thing that Lulu did all the time, she made sure no matter what questions were directed their way, she always allowed Ernie to answer the question, push him out in front of her just to make sure she did not want to be anything to do with the spotlight. Yeah. And she was a gracious lady. Nice, nice, super lady. Mm-hmm. I really mean that.
They had one photo of her, I forget which Detroit paper it was in, of when they were newlyweds. You can imagine how long ago that was. I look at this photo and I couldn't believe it. This girl was movie star hot.
Beautiful.
And I thought to myself, how the hell did Ernie ever wind this? Did he wind up with this girl? Did he really overachieve, didn't he?
Well, Ernie's gone. I think he used to tell Lulu he was Ty Cobb at first.
But you know, this is really weird. You know, Ernie's gone. George Kell's gone. Sparky's gone. Chuck Daly's gone. Jack McCloskey's gone. Scotty Robertson's gone. Anybody we ever knew. It's unbelievable.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you know me. I'm not going yet. Let's not get crazy.
I'd like to throw this out about Ted. I can't think of anybody in the history of this town who has that resume with not just being a four-time champion, not just being a former coach, not just being incredibly generous with the Ted Lindsay Foundation. He gave over $3 million to autism research at Oakland U. He also started the union, and the prejudice against him, or I shouldn't say the prejudice, but the backlash from the owners, traded him because of his union activities to Chicago, and he kept on fighting along with Doug Harvey of Montreal. I don't think anybody in the history of this market, in this town, can match him in the complete picture of humanitarian, union activist for his fellow players, champion, coach, all of it. And he also spent his entire life here once he came.
70 years.
Yeah.
70 years. And the big problem in Detroit, the reason Jack Adams, the autocratic manager of the Wings for all those years in the Stanley Cup championships, is that when it came time to sign his contract every year, Gordie Howe would go into Jack Adams' office, and Jack Adams said the same thing. Gord, I want you to know you're just like a son to me. you're such a great player for us. You're like a son to me. Here's a blank contract. I want you to fill in your number, and I'll sign it, whatever you put. And every single year, Gordie Howe would dutifully give himself a $1,000 a year raise. If he was making $14,000 a year and he scored 40 goals, the next year he gave himself $15,000 a year. And he and Lindsay actually wound up having a fallout over this eventually.
I would hope so.
What finally blew this thing up is two of the guys I grew up watching on Hockey Night in Canada with Toronto Maple Leafs, two defensemen, Carl Brewer and Bobby Bond, both play with Detroit late in their careers. So the Wings picked up Bobby Bond, and he and Gord are talking contract. And Bond says to Gord,
"How much you making?"
And Carl Brewer did the same thing. They said, "You know what? I make more money than you do." And Gordie Howe said, "What? Bobby Bond said, I don't believe it." Brewer and Bond both showed Gordie their contracts, and they were making more money than he was, and Gord knew he had been had by Jack Adams. Mm-hmm. So Ted Lindsay and Jack Adams battled continuously, and that's why, again, they shipped him to the hated Chicago Blackhawks. Sorry, Dan.
Well, this is a story that almost rivals Northrup and Kaline. Kaline, when all that hoopla started about him getting a $100,000 contract, and he turned it down, and he only took 93, well, what happened with that was everybody who actually took money, they had a real problem because nobody got a raise that year when Kaline turned down the money. Nobody got a raise. Northrup almost quit the game. He said, "You got to give me some money." And they did not give anybody a dime because Kaline had said no. And they said, and Campbell was telling everybody, "Listen, if L. Kaline turned down a $7,000 raise, do you think I'm going to give you a $5,000 or $10,000, $15,000 raise?" And Jim was tight. Jim was at least at a minimum tight. And it was always a bad time to go see him, especially during the winter.
Well, he must have taken lessons from Jack Adams, because Adams did that same thing. In fact, Adams planted rumors about Lindsay after he traded him, about false comments that he allegedly made to the press that he never said, showed a fake contract showing an inflated annual salary, and the ruse worked because the players rejected the union. So they undermined Ted even after they traded him. And yes, it was years later that Gordy, in fact, told me, he said, "I was making $40,000. I talked to these guys, saw they were making $80,000, and I got pissed." By then it was too late. They'd already rejected the union contract. They traded Ted because of that. So his teammates, including Gordy, really stabbed him in the back by being unwittingly naive. One of the sad things about Lindsay, I thought, and this is when I started covering sports here in the late 70s. He became the coach in the 79-80 season. He took over at the end for Bobby Crum, coached like, I don't know, 15 or 20 games, and they fired him early the next year. Very, very sad that the great Ted Lindsay was let go so unceremoniously. And I remember, Bob, I'm sure you remember this, when he became the coach, he created these little hockey pucks, and I'm sorry I gave mine away, that said "Aggressive Hockey is back in town." And he was going to build the team in his image of hard-checking, hard-hitting team. Of course, it didn't work, but I thought it was very, very sad. I looked it up this morning from 1968, when I think Del Vecchio was the coach. For the next 18 years, they had 15 coaches, tried every Red Wing great. Del Vecchio tried to coach. Abel tried to coach. Bill Gadsby coached. And the last one was Lindsay of the great.
Now, I'll tell you about that aggressive hockey thing. I was at Channel 7 at the time that Teddy instituted that. And before the season started, they had an exhibition game one night. And I can't even remember who they're playing against. It was over at the old Windsor Arena. I go over there, and this was in the days, of course, when they had Dennis Polonich and Danny Maloney, and guys like that. It was one of the worst bloodbaths I've ever seen in my life. This was nothing but wall-to-wall fights and scrapes all game long. And you know what it was? It was just an embarrassment to hockey. And so the next day, I went on Channel 7, or that night I got some of the highlights on, and I did nothing but show the fights. The next day I'm at practice, Danny Maloney accosts me, comes and says, "Bob, I saw what you did last night. Why did you just show the fights?" I said, "That's what you want, isn't it, Danny? That's what you want. Was there any hockey being played?" So what Lindsay did with that team and with Maloney and Polonich at that point in time, it just wasn't good for hockey. But that was Teddy's personality.
Yeah. Okay, we miss Ted Lindsay. We'll always miss him. And I can't, as I threw it out there, you guys couldn't come up with anybody. So then my pronouncement will stand. Nobody in the history of Detroit sports accomplished more as a player, as a humanitarian, as a longtime Detroiter, as someone who fought for players' rights and cared about his fellow players.
First of all, you know, just hang on a minute. Let me tell you, he may have done that in hockey. He didn't do it in baseball, football. And I'm not ripping it. This got nothing to do with Ted. You're making a statement that's absolutely
110% wrong. Give me somebody else. Give me another name.
Tell you something, because the guys who I know who have donated hundreds of thousands of dollars don't want to go out front and promote themselves. They don't do that. And I'm not talking about Ted Lindsay right now. I'm talking about some players in this town have gone way out of their way to raise money for any charity that you can think of, whether it be cancer or what Ted did or what other players did. Everybody has done a lot. And because if you play in this town, you will give back. That's one thing this town teaches you, that but you
Denny,
will get back. And for you to make that statement is absolutely ridiculous.
Denny, Eli's not just talking about giving to charity, okay? That's part of what Teddy did.
I heard
Eli
what he said.
Talking about the all-time legacy.
His union organizing, everything that he did. I'm not disagreeing with Eli on this. When you look at what he meant to that franchise, four Stanley Cup championships, the union activity, what he did for the players in the NHL, and the fact that he lived in Detroit for 70 years. I mean, come on, man.
Not knocking anybody, Denny. Come on.
Everybody who became a union rep got in trouble. They had a short career after they became a union rep, especially in the early days. I'm not talking about now. I mean, some guys are union rep for 10, 15 years now. But when we started the union back in the late 60s, we had trouble with guys that decided they wanted to be the rep, and they wound up with all the problems on their desk, on their home. They got traded here. They got traded there. They got traded to another place.
Name a Detroit Tiger who got traded because of his union activities. Name somebody.
I will go over the list, and I'll tell
you. Okay, let's move on.
Next show then, right?
Listen, I want to talk to him before I give you the name, right, guys. Right. I'm not giving you a name without them allowing me to do so.
By the way, I want to tell you one other thing about Lindsay. His nickname, Terrible Ted, that's okay. They had a nickname. But we got a guy from Sarnia, Ontario, who had a long and meritorious career in the NHL. His name is Pat Verbeek. I think, Eli, you know Patty. Mm-hmm. And Pat's nickname when he played the little ball of hate. Now, that should have been Lindsay's nickname. Is that one of the all-time classics?
Should have patented that.
I want to talk about another great young athlete, and I want to talk about Michigan State a little bit. Cassius Winston. Again, amazing performance, but I think, Bob, you and I were kind of right, even though we predicted the blowout, Michigan State, and Michigan State played a brilliant game that day. But I think what we presumed, which was that they were thin now. Without Winston, they really couldn't be what that they had hoped to be, and that they ran out of gas against Indiana. And Winston can't play 40 minutes of every game. And I think we realize that Michigan State is really hurting at this point. And I think
They're doubling him. That's why he didn't score 30 points, because it's getting harder.
Because there's nobody else that can score.
Yeah, you don't have Nick Ward to get the ball to. You don't have Josh Langford to get the ball to. They can concentrate on Cassius. And that's why you and I both said that they're done. I think they're certainly going to beat this week. They're certainly going to beat Nebraska, which is a very troubled program. But I don't think there's any question that Michigan's going into East Lansing next Saturday night and winning that game. But we'll see. We thought that Michigan State would lose at Ann Arbor. I don't know.
And it seems go ahead. Denny, you want to say something?
One of my famous quotes, that's the reason they play the game. And you never know what's going to happen until the tip-off, and then you start to play the game. But the bottom line, listen, these two teams create such magic in this state. Everybody watches these two guys, two teams play each other. It's fun to watch all the hype that leads up to the games itself. And listen, that's one of the reasons we love the sports in this whole state, because there's such intensity and emotion.
I really like this Michigan team. I've been telling everybody this all season long. I really like them. And to see what happened at Maryland on Sunday when those idiot kids get up when Iggy's at the free throw line, who had a terrific game, they said, "You are ugly. You are ugly." Yeah. I mean, what kind of BS is that? But this,
you know, even I'm sure you guys know this. Even the PA announcer got on the PA and told the crowd to stop it. Yeah. Stop it. Quit calling them ugly.
Yeah.
What should they have called them?
Mr. Brazdeikis after the way he played.
You're playing the Yankees in 66. Here comes Yogi bat to face you, and the fans at Tiger Stadium get up and chant at Yogi, "You are ugly." I was in the stands back then. We never thought of that. We wouldn't have done it anyway.
Well, the nice thing about Brzezinski,
Zbigniew Brzezinski was a United States government.
And his wife is married to Morning Joe. Yeah, Brzezinski.
He loves to embrace the villain role. He says it motivates me. Mm-hmm. In fact, at the last part of the ballgame, he even blew a kiss to the crowd that was calling him ugly. So, you know, the kid's a hell of a kid. He's going to be a tough guy. And I hope he does real well in the NBA, because I just don't see him here in 2 years.
Not in 2 years. Right. I think he should come back next year. But, hey, winning on the road is tough. Winning on the road is very tough, as we know, the Big Ten.
Last year, talking about Iggy and all this stuff, he's coming out. He probably shouldn't be at Michigan. And under this proposal that Adam Silver came out with last week, he probably wouldn't be. And that is, the NBA has seen enough of this one-and-done nonsense. Most of these kids, Zion Williamson at Duke, Barrett, all these guys, they don't belong at a university to begin with. So Adam Silver is saying, from now on, we're lowering the draft age from 19 to 18 so a kid can go directly to the NBA if he wants to. And remember that it's not as though they're out of a job if the kid doesn't make the NBA. They have the NBA G League. The NBA G League. I'd like to see this. I'd like to see this one and done stuff stopped.
But they don't allow the kid to go back and play college ball if he indicates that he wants to be pro.
Becomes a professional. Yeah. If he gets paid to play basketball, he can't play college.
Okay. I'm just wondering. I think it'd be better for them to let him go back to college if they fail the first 6 months or year or whatever time period they can create.
The reason some of these European players come over here and fit into the league immediately, like Luka, whatever his last name is, Doncic, I think, on the Mavericks.
Dallas, right.
Is that you can be a pro at age 16 in Europe. These kids are sent away like the hockey players are to play in the OHL. By the time they're 18, they've been playing against older guys and pros, and they're more ready. So we don't have to have this college system. It's arbitrary, and we keep on changing the rules all the time. We love it because of Michigan and Michigan State and all that. But, yes, I think this other plan, especially with the G League, will give guys a chance to develop the same way.
Go ahead. Why did they change the name of the D League to the G League?
Good question. You know, I don't know. It was developmental league before. I don't know why. It's G for Grand.
Because Gatorade sponsored it.
Oh, there you go.
Gatorade came into the NBA and made up a multi-gazillion dollar offer. They said, hey, will you change the name of the D League to the G League? And they said, yeah, sure. How much?
To go back to State for a second, I'm watching Winston the other day, and I'm starting to look at him and think, you know, this guy is really a throwback. I mean, he's got the Slick Watts headband on, which is old school. He's so level-headed. He's not flashy. He's smooth. He's efficient. No outward displays. No fist pumping. No seeking attention. And Izzo, who's the hothead, said, to say the least, he's a little more level than me, which is probably good. You know, I guess I'm frick and he's frack. He does have some balance to it. So Izzo was saying, hey, I'm an on-edge lunatic all the time. Thank God I got this kid who's level-headed and he's a coach out on the floor. Very impressed with him. So many ways.
I see a lot more games than you guys do, from a lot more different sports than you guys do as well. So yesterday I'm watching Creighton Marquette. If you don't know, Marquette's got an amazing player named Marcus Howard. And so at some point, Creighton was leading that game most of the way, and they eventually won at Marquette. There's a timeout called. You're in the huddle, the Creighton bench, okay? And what happens is one of the freshman kids is sitting there, and he says to his head coach, he says, you know, I really messed that play up out there. You know, I just it's my fault. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. Creighton head coach Greg McDermott smiles, laughs, reaches over and playfully just grabs the kid's chin and says, don't worry about it. It's okay. It's just one play. Let's go. I said, was this guy the anti-Izzo or what?
And, you know, which brings to my beeline. So, you know, finally, at the end of the game, because his three-point shooting has been ridiculous, is Teske, John Teske, the center. And then he finally hits a three, and then I realized, because Beilein says, hey, just keep shooting. Don't worry about it. Don't have to change because you're having a bad game. You know, play within the and you got to keep shooting. And so the kids are just awful.
Teske's had about four bad games shooting in a row, although he didn't shoot against Michigan State. And I don't. Why does John? I'm thinking the same thing. Eli watching the game yesterday. John, tell the kid to go inside where he belongs. Get out on the blocks and stop shooting these 3-pointers. Damn it!
Finally hit a big one at the end. Anyway, last thing about Winston, you know, Cassius. So who's the only other Cassius we've ever seen in sports? Cassius Clay changed his name. If Cassius Clay hadn't changed his name to Muhammad Ali, imagine how many young black kids in America would have been named Cassius over. Really kind of a cool name. There would have been millions of them. And so credit to Cassius Winston's parents for going with the name. All right, let's take a quick break.
I don't know that they named him after Cassius.
Well, I don't know that either.
I've never seen that.
I don't know that
I haven't either.
I guess I made that leap.
Are you going to do a commercial now?
I can do a commercial now. Okay.
Okay, and when we come out of this, we're going to do the Tigers.
Yes, we'll do the Tigers when we come out.
Because Mr. Ilitch gave a long, rambling press conference the other day, and I was there.
Did you see my former protege from New York days, Gus Johnson, on the air doing the game on Saturday?
Yes.
He went nuts over the fact that Cassius Winston played at UD Jesuit High School, where Gus was a great jock.
Yeah.
Gus was a great jock. And Cassius Winston, favorite city, Detroit. Greatest city in the world. And Gus is pounding. And Jimmy Jackson saying, what up?
I actually like Gus better at basketball. He doesn't scream as much as he does at football. Anyway, let's get right to the point here. You hate your contact lenses. I never wore them, but I see people who do. They struggle every day. You hate your reading glasses. You lose them all the time. People hate them. Why not just be done with all of it? They're all ancient technologies. Ben Franklin wore glasses way, way back in today. Come on now. Every year you need a new prescription, you need new frames and lenses, and like contacts, you take them off, you can't see anything. Dr. Yaldo has helped over 50,000 metro area people get 20 better vision with what's called CATS Custom LASIK, the most advanced in the world, basically for people 40 and under. And the amazing multifocal lens implants for people 50 plus will give you great near and far vision for life. You'll never get cataracts. No matter what, everyone needs to get an eye exam. Regular insurance covers it. You don't want to let conditions like macular degeneration get going. You need to get it checked and also get a free evaluation if you're interested in LASIK or multifocal lens implants. They will be right for you. Call the number. That's 1-800-398-EYES. 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them you heard it on No Filter. Mention Denny, Bob, or Eli and get a huge discount thanks to us and Dr. Yaldo.
Dr. John Kitzmiller has a team of therapists that will make you see silly. His company called the Bald Mountain Behavioral Medicine serves as a private outpatient therapeutic resource for children, adolescents, adults, couples, families, and groups. Its team of caring, experienced professionals specializes in psychotherapy, psychological and academic assessment, substance abuse, Suboxone therapy, MMMP, and pain management. Suboxone therapy is one of the new toys on the block. This product will be able to cure you of any kind of addictions that you have in a matter of days. With over 30 years' experience in these fields of medicine, Dr. Kitzmiller and his staff are dedicated clinicians, and they offer treatment for clients experiencing difficulties in such areas as addiction counseling, academic performance, and special needs. Call Dr. Kitzmiller today at 248-693-4000. That's Dr. Kitzmiller, 248-693-4000, and I promise you one thing, you'll get in right away to see him and his staff. Dr. John Kitzmiller, 248-693-4000. Don't wait. Make the call today.
Okay.
Mike Ilitch.
Mike Ilitch. You mean Chris Ilitch or Chris Ilitch? Which Ilitch would you like to talk about?
The father of Chris.
Okay.
I think he's still dead, isn't he?
I think so.
He's still dead?
Last couple of years.
As of an hour ago, like this microphone, he was dead as hell.
Well, we'll have to tear the Mr. Eye patches off if that's not true. Yeah. Go ahead. What's your point?
He did a great big press conference down here, talked to an awful lot of people. And the one thing that came out of all of his explanations for everything was discipline. If I heard the word discipline, I heard it 25 times. And immediately when he mentions the word discipline, he talks about Josh Harrison as being such a disciplined player. I don't know if Josh Harrison is such a disciplined player. But I know one thing. If you don't start signing some of the stars that are available, it's going to take you 3 times, 4 times, 5 times to get back to regular being competitive. They're not competitive now. They're going to have a very long season this year unless something happens But, you know, we've let two guys get away so far, Harper and Machado. And then there's another one. I read in the paper the other day, the L.A. paper, that Mr. Trout, their center fielder worth $1 zillion, is about to get the biggest contract increase in the history of Major League Baseball. And he deserves it.
Wait a minute. First of all, Trout's not up for two more years.
I know that, but they want to increase it now. They're going to increase it now.
Exactly. The numbers being tossed around from Mike Trout, 10 years, $350 million.
More than that.
In 2 years, is that going to be enough? Is that going to be enough 2 years from now?
He's also got $33 million a year coming the next couple of years, too. So if they signed him now.
But just think of Harper at $330 million. The guy, and I'm not, listen, everybody's done this. You've thrown a bat, you've thrown a helmet, you've done this in a clubhouse setting. But, man, I'm going to tell you, $330 million, and all of a sudden Harper has found gentleness. I don't know if you saw any of the interviews the last couple of days, but maybe $330 million settles him down. But, boy, think about that, $330 million.
It's a lot of money. It was a lot of money when Nolan Ryan got $1 million. It was a lot, like I said, when Ricky Henderson got $3 million. It was a lot when Jack Morris
not
got
like
$5 million.
$330 million.
Okay. But, you know, the analytics – that dominate the game now, and we could talk about this stat called WAR, wins above replacement, that nobody understands except for the pencil neck geeks, the nerds who have figured all this out. But each
sabermetricians, all of whom should have gone to college and become cancer researchers instead of wasting their brilliance on baseball. Good. God.
Anyway, WAR, 1 point of WAR, is approximately worth $8 million. Now there were years that I would look at Cabrera. He would have 6.8 WAR 1 year, which would technically be $50 million, and was only making 30. So there are those that say that Harper, who's had a WAR as high as 9 or 8, or maybe even 1 year 10, is a bargain at $33 million. Now, yes, it's a crazy amount of money, but we're dealing with mathematics that you and I, we peons who weren't finance majors, don't exactly understand. Trout, I think, is in the 8, 9, 10 range. So technically, if you want to argue with the analysts or analytics experts, it's a bargain. So Mike Trout is worth $100 million a year, or $80 million, or $70 million, according to the stats that
we
use now.
You know what, Eli? I got another three-letter W word for you. It's my favorite word. You know what it is? Win. Win.
Yes,
that's what it is. And what has Bryce Harper won? That's what it's about.
You know, why I hate that? I hate that so much because Harper could have hit 500 with 100 home runs and still not won, and it doesn't mean he didn't have a good year. It takes a lot to win, and I tell you, I had two partners before you two guys, Kirk Gibson and Gary Danielson. And Gary's point was that Gibby wouldn't have won either if they hadn't traded for Willie Hernandez. He wouldn't have won either if Oral Hershiser or somebody else hadn't done something great. You can't just say one guy
this
wins.
Guy's,
Denny
guy's
didn't
got
win 68 alone.
And Strasburg, just to mention, he's got Scherzer and Strasburg, and he's got that left-handed pitcher he did anyway.
How can you blame him for not winning? Why don't you blame Strasburg for not
Major
winning?
League Baseball. They have the best pitching staff in baseball, no question about it. But the thing that gets me with Ilitch is he says, I don't have any patience. I'm going after a winner. Guys who make a difference are the guys you should go after. We've traded for a lot of guys that nobody knows. And regardless of that, there's no structure to what they're doing right now. They're just bringing in one guy after another, testing them at a position, two positions, three positions. And the next thing you know, the guy's gone. Another guy's gone. Or the minor league contracts this year. I'll tell you what's really been unbelievable. The number of minor league contracts passed out to veterans.
Yeah.
The veterans are leading the league this year with new contracts in the minor league.
Jose Iglesias.
No cut.
The ex-Tiger, yeah. So here's the quote that you're referring to, Danny. He goes, I think it was from Chris Ilitch. I think the key for all of us is to make sure we're very disciplined in finding the right path to that success. And I think we're doing exactly that. Now, that sounds good. But discipline
sounds
means
good.
We're not going to get any good players for a long time or established players and let our prospects blossom. Now, maybe that will happen. Maybe it won't happen. But, you know, the point is, as Bob has said, why get rid of every good player in the belief that Al Avila is the architect that's going to put this all together.
And Denny said a couple of minutes ago, we got to sign these free agents, let them go. Who wants to play for the Detroit Tigers right now, who's a big free agent?
Yep.
It's a rebuilding club. You're going to go to Detroit, Glamour City, USA, and you're going to lose. What big free agent is going to play for the Detroit Tigers?
Well, a lot of people don't even want to come to Detroit, as you know.
That's what I mean. That's my
regardless,
point.
Well, I didn't know. I thought you were talking about the lack of talent because we don't have it right now. I mean, listen, when they started trading all these top-notch players last year, even though some of them were getting older, at least they knew how to play, and they were a good influence on younger players. There isn't really anybody with the ball club now that could be a strong influence on the younger players. And believe me, it makes a difference to have. And I'm not talking about K-Line today, but they have a K-Line and a Cash and guys like that who've been around who could throw their influence out there and tell guys how to play as they're playing.
How about a guy named Miguel Cabrera?
Can't help.
Why can't he be that guy? He doesn't want to be that guy.
He doesn't.
It's not what he does.
He doesn't even want to run to first base, for God's sakes.
Don't get into him grabbing everybody's ass again, okay? That's when he's playing first base.
That's all he wants to do is grab an ass.
Oh, God. Anyway, so, okay, let's get back to Chris Illich for a second. What else is he going to do? It's PR. Spring training is PR. It's building. It's like new golf clubs. I got these new golf clubs. It's a new season, and I'm going to break 80. And then, of course, it's the same golfer with the clubs don't matter. And so you can speak
nothing can help, folks. Nothing can help his game.
That my game is.
You know what? The Detroit media has a well-deserved reputation for being feckless and soft. I've never met Chris Illich in my life. Maybe when he was a little boy and his dad would bring him around. I knew his dad well. If I'm
nice
at
guy.
That news conference in Lakeland, I'm sure he's a nice guy. If I'm at that news conference in Lakeland, I stand up with one question. Did you order the breakup of the Detroit Tigers over financial reasons? Did you order Al Avila to get rid of all the all-star talent the Tigers had? If you did that, why did you do it? And if you didn't do it, did Al Avila act on his own?
Do you really think he's going to answer that question?
I'm asking that question, pal.
I'll answer it for you.
I want to see how he responds to that question.
And I'll tell you how he'll answer that. He'll say,
That's a yes or no.
What do you mean he'll say?
Then that means Al Avila took it on his own to break up that team. You believe that?
I don't think, with all due respect to Al Avila, I don't think Al Avila can use the men's room without permission. I really don't. I think this whole plan.
Then he did order the sale. Then you're saying he would lie. You're saying Chris Illich.
Listen, I still believe what I heard a couple of 4 or 5 months ago. This ball club is being pared down to sell it to somebody. Now, we can all think Danny Gilbert, but maybe there's other people that are going to be involved. But that's what I heard 4 or 5 different times,
Bob,
from 4 or 5 different people who were unrelated to each other.
Bob, that would have been the right question, a great question, and it would take somebody with balls, 76089 balls, to ask that question.
Because
he said, his quote was, I think Al Avila and his staff have an excellent vision, which would be a smokescreen for saying, I told them what to do, it's my vision, but they're the guys out there that are going to take the fall for it.
And then you challenge that. You follow up and say, surely they're not acting alone. You're saying Al Avila and his staff have excellent vision. Surely they're not acting alone, Chris. Chris, don't BS us, all right? But again, In news conferences in the past, I hate to say this, but in my day, you would have had Joe Falls. You would have had Al Ackerman.
Sure, yeah.
You would have had Jerry Green. You would have had me asking questions like that, and it's just not happening anymore.
No. That's such a good point, and I don't want to get into it deeply, but the local media, which is basically now comprised of low-priced talent, that is, and I'm not knocking them for their ability, but low-priced talent that doesn't have the history of Joe Falls and Jerry Green and Al Ackerman, and they're not going to ask these tough questions. They don't. It's not what they see their role. In fact, there was a woman at Channel 4 named Katrina Hancock about 10 years ago, and I said to the news director, who's Bobby Ellis, who you remember from Channel 2, right, Denny? I said, you know, Bob, I think she thinks it's her job to promote the teams. I think she really thinks it's her job to say, hey, let's go get them tonight, boys. And I think that's the point of what you're saying here.
Were you questioning this young woman's credentials as a broadcast journalist?
Yes, I was.
Is that what you were doing?
Yes, I was.
Are you then, by extension, questioning the credentials of all the other bimbos on the air, sideline reporters and everything, as solid broadcast
I used
sports
her,
journalists?
I didn't make it a gender thing. Don't put words in my mouth.
I'm making it a gender thing.
Well, let's not make it a gender thing. You guys make me nervous when you do these things.
I mean, really, sir, really, what's the audience for these? Your wives, my girlfriend, are they watching these games on TV? No.
You know, I got to tell you.
Guys are watching these games. And these programming people, they think that we want to see hot bimbos with big boobs talking to us about sports. Yeah, I mean, I've had enough. Okay, I'm not PC.
You know, I got to tell you, I got six granddaughters.
Yeah.
All of them,
and they ain't watching the games either.
That's right. But they go to
my daughters aren't watching the games.
They go to the games though with their boyfriends and their loved ones. But you know what? I have taken such a, and I used to be. Listen, I'm an Irish Catholic from Chicago. You can imagine what I grew up with. Tough Irish father.
Oh no, we read the papers about what you must have grown up with if you're a Catholic from Chicago.
900 square feet house and all the other things. But
not what I'm talking about.
A different respect for women once I started having two daughters, and then I had six granddaughters. And I'm telling you, I learned one thing, and Eli will bear this out too. The girls are as smart as we are.
Oh, jeez, I never doubted that.
No,
I think my oldest daughter's smarter than all of us.
Here's the analogy that I use about this. Eli, when you lived in New York, and of course you're actually from there, part of your childhood, did you ever go to fashion week at Bryant Park in
Manhattan?
I did once. You went?
No.
Okay, so here's my, and I had a girl in the PR industry in fashion, so she took me one time too. Here's my analogy. Who's watching that show? Women. Gay men. Nobody else but women and gay men. So I got an idea. Let's take this unbelievably hot, handsome guy, heterosexual guy, who knows nothing about fashion, but just to get the women and the gay men interested, let's let him be the commentator or the reporter on Fashion Week. I mean, this is insanity.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that at all. It is. It is. In fact, here's what's interesting. Women don't like watching women as sideline reporters.
Right.
Women don't like women sportscasters. Women say they shouldn't be doing that.
People.
I know. Okay, where did I want to go after this? Okay, two things. I want to talk about the Pistons a little bit because
they go home, Danny. It's 9 degrees there. You're in Lakeland.
We're in the right place today, I'll tell you. What have they won now? 9 out of 11?
They've won 9 out of 11. I guess the big question is, will people actually get interested now because they're playing very well? They're going to finish 6th or 7th or may win their first playoff game in over 11 years. Is this the way?
Think about that. About the tradition of Isaiah and Lambeer. Mm-hmm. Think about the guys you covered, you know, Sheed and Rip and Chauncey, Big Shot, win their first playoff game in 11 years.
I said to Greg Kelser last year, I said, Gregory, after they beat Boston one of those games in 2008 when they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, if I told you then that's the last playoff game they will win until at least 2019, what would you have said? He just smiled. I said, of course, that was beyond comprehension. But maybe fandom works this way. If they're good, if they make the playoffs, win a few games, everybody will be back. I don't know.
But, you know, when you think about all the people that at least you and I interviewed over the years and the great interviews and the great people that came on the show and traveled to get to our show from time to time. I mean, we had such a great time with these guys. You never thought that the spirit of the front office was going to go away. The spirit of that office, front office, the tenacity and the emotion left when Mr. Davidson died. The whole ball game. It's like it changed overnight, that quick.
And I think also you lose faith when it gets bad year after year. For example, the whole Van Gundy mess. Then when they trade for Griffin, you just assume it's an awful trade, widely panned, and you start to say it's just the franchise stinks. They can't do anything right. Now that they're winning, hey, the Griffin trade doesn't look so bad. The guy has never played at this high a level. In fact, they might even be able to trade that contract that a year ago looked untradeable. You got Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson's better now. We ripped them for that missing Donovan Mitchell in the draft and taking Luke Kennard. Well, Kennard is playing better now.
Missed Donovan Mitchell in the draft.
That's true. So, and when I went early this year, and the arena's empty, and they got to play music to see, so you don't hear all the sneakers squeaking and the ball bouncing. You know, they've turned it around a little bit. So,
what is the Detroit Pistons record as we record this show on a Monday morning? Oh, you're cheating now?
They're under even.
I don't know. I know they're.
They would not be in the playoff picture if they played in the Western Conference. They're even at 500.
30-31, so, something like that?
31-31.
Yeah.
So let's just stop going overboard because they had a nice little run lately. Yeah. I like some of the talent on this team. I don't know why they've struggled. I don't know why they're not better. And if they do start winning again, are fans going to come back down from Oakland County, which is that club's fan base? Are they going to drive downtown, especially on a miserable snowy night in January or February, to buy $200 a seat tickets to see them at the new Little Caesars
they
Arena?
Will, I don't know. They will on a short-term basis if it's the place. The reason the Pistons were so popular when they were good, of course they were good, so people want to see them win, but it was the thing to do. It was the place to be. When I used to watch people strut on the court as they went to their $1,000 courtside seats in 88 and 89 and 90 was because it was the thing to do. It was a place to be seen. It was the association with a winner. I think you're right. It has to go longer than that for that aura to come back, for people to show up on a February to see the Hornets. But, you know, on a short-term basis, I think it will. But so my question was, will fans start coming back in a regular way? And I say no. They got to be good and consistent over a long stretch to start to be what they used to be.
We've had that same problem going down here with the Heat. Miami Heat were really an in thing, man. Everybody wanted a part of that action in the Shaq days. And then, you know, after they got LeBron to go with Dwayne Wade, Miami Heat have fallen on hard times. You might have seen the game against Detroit just the other night. There, you know, the crowds are dwindling down there. It's just not as hot as it used to be. And Jimmy Buffett doesn't even show up anymore.
And now, how about the baseball team? Is the baseball team still going downhill?
Oh, what a joke. Derek Jeter has taken that thing and run it into the ground. He's got an ownership.
But how can he run it into the ground, Bob? I mean, they're not buying anybody. They're not trading for anybody. They're not developing anybody.
They let everybody go to free agency. They traded good players away. And, you know,
sounds familiar.
The baseball situation down here is really an interesting one. I was talking to this Cuban guy a number of years ago who was a good baseball player back on the mainland. And I keep asking him and other people the question, how can a team comprised primarily of Latin players not be all the rage in Miami? You know what he said to me? He said, you know what? If the Miami Marlins had a lot of Cuban guys, man, I'm all in with this. But if they've got Puerto Ricans, they got Mexicans, they got Venezuelans, I couldn't care less. Doesn't mean I'm coming.
We were talking before the tangent there, the Marlins, but the apathy we're saying about the Pistons, I think, is still there. So this could be a temporary reprieve, but they're still an apathetic franchise. The fans don't care about them. They don't get excited. They won't buy the tickets. The opposite is what's happening in L.A., where they get LeBron James, the biggest name in basketball, maybe the greatest player of all time. And if you have time, go on to or log on to hear Snoop Dogg's rave about the Lakers, and that'll show you fans that are engaged, that are angry. And that's what you want. That's why the Lions are still so successful, because people either love them or hate them. And the ones that love them hate them, and the ones that hate them love them, and they just get so emotional about it all. So that's
But the Lions only play 8 games a year, plus at a home. Couple of exhibition games. You know,
And football's different, but in L.A., the Lakers' popularity and what they mean to the city, and the fact that the stars come out, shows the passion that there is for the
Lions?
Team. That's
the Lions?
No. The Lakers. The passion that the fans have, like Snoop and everything, with the sold-out arena, is a whole different story than the Pistons.
You're talking to somebody who worked for Madison Square Garden Network for 10 years. And I'm telling you, being in the same building with the Knicks, it's the same damn thing. You get Spike Lee and all these people running back every game because the Knicks are a huge ticket item. And it doesn't matter what the Brooklyn Nets do. It doesn't matter who they get or championships they win. It's all about the Knicks in New York, and it always will be. But, you know, we're talking about LeBron and being the greatest player of all time and stuff. I got a kick out of this. I watched James Harden score 58 points against Miami the other night. He scored 42 against Boston on Sunday. And I see a quote from people. Is he the most unguardable player in the history of basketball. I don't know. It seems to me when I was a kid growing up, there was a guy named Wilt Chamberlain who averaged 50 points a game and scored 100 one night. I think he might have been the most unguardable player in the history.
This was the 24th time this year that Harden scored more than 40. 24th time in one year.
Right, and the 26th time this year he gave up more than 40 on defense.
You watch this guy play defense
because I watch him all the time. I'll rerun plays, my own replays on television, just to see some of the things this guy's doing defensively and not doing. It's almost comical to see.
You know, we got to go down there and spend a night with him one time just to watch him do all the ball games. You stay up all night and watch all these games?
And how about actually, I do, and I get up in the morning and watch the games too.
God.
You know why? There's an old joke. I'm going to clean it up for our show. Yeah. Why does a dog lick his testicles? You know why, Denny? Because he can.
Good point.
I'm retired here in South Florida. You know why I watch so many games? Because I can. And I got a lot of other interests going on, too. I'll tell you that much. But I enjoy watching this stuff. I really do. And I love the coach of the Houston Rockets, who aren't going to win anything this year with Harden, of course, because my nickname for him has always been Roll It Out Mike. Mike D'Antoni just rolls that ball out the center court and says, fellas, I'm going to get a hot dog and a beer. I'll be back around the second quarter. Have a good time.
Yeah.
What do you think the chances are of Magic Johnson lasting another couple of years with the Lakers?
He's the owner. I think the chances are great.
He's a little pimple on a goat's ass owner.
Yeah.
What are the chances
of Luke Walton lasting through this season and into next year?
I can't believe he did. I just can't.
But the drama surrounding the Lakers, not just a Magic accusing the Pelicans of not negotiating in good faith when they tried to get Anthony Davis to save their season and couldn't. The criticism of LeBron that he's out with the two chains, their album, rapper, go to the league, whatever that means. He stays up late for them, you know, doesn't play against the Warriors the next night, although they called it load management reasons, which probably means he needed to rest. He'd been coming back from a groin injury. But it's just fascinating. And LeBron is interesting in that he's involved in all this pop culture stuff now. He had the shop on HBO. I see these promos before the Michigan games come on CBS.
Did you see the one the other day?
Miracle.
They're promoting some television show.
Yeah. Right.
At the top of the television show, it says
executive producer.
Right. Called the Million Dollar Mile. Right.
Son, you want to play basketball anymore? Or not. You don't want to play basketball? Then just go do whatever you want
to
do.
Well, the other thing is he wants to buy a team. And he said, ain't no maybe about it. I'm going to do that blank. He told The Athletic about owning a team when his career is over. Jordan owns a team. He wants to own a team. He's involved in rap music. He's involved in movies. He's involved in television.
No. Hold, back that up, please. That's the ultimate oxymoron.
What?
Rap music. So would you rephrase that, please?
I believe before he destroys
rap
us, I think
rhythms,
it's time to get off.
Rap
Isn't
poetry.
It time to go? Isn't it about time to go?
Rap music.
I think the only area he has not hit is the American Indian. So let's get off of here before he gets on the American Indian.
I think that...
The only reason you want to get off the air is because you've got some autographs to sign at $50 a pop or whatever you're making.
Not 50, only 45.
All right.
Interesting, the Lakers talk versus the Piston talk and LeBron. LeBron and here's one last thing. Unless you have something to add to that.
Hey, Danny, I got an idea.
Go ahead.
Why don't you go out and start making $45 an autograph and leave Zarrett and me here and we can handle the rest of the show, okay?
Yeah, right. We won't have a show come tomorrow.
How many days are you down there, by the way, for?
Through the rest of the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where are you doing your signing? Is it in the outside the
ballpark? No, inside the ballpark.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a beautiful setup. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. And the other day, I'll tell you what happened, which is really funny. The top of my head got burnt. Didn't realize it until I took a shower that night. But when the water hit the top of your head in the shower, oh my God, I thought somebody had hit me with a racket or something.
That sunshine. You're not, by the way, we did have a question for you. So let me see this. You know, people did write to asknofilter@gmail.com. You talked about it the other day. He says, I was in college in 68, attended a number of games. You pitched one for the Tigers. I'm sure your 31 wins won't be equaled. He says, it seemed like they lasted around 2 hours in 1968. Is that correct? You already answered that at a previous show. Who was the toughest hitters you faced in 68? I think you mentioned Boog Powell. But here's this interesting part of the question from Bill, by the way, from Dearborn Heights. Did it matter to you who was catching? I'd never thought about that till Mark Fidrich had his special catcher, Bruce Kim. Yeah, Did it matter to you?
It only mattered to me in Washington. I had a We had two guys there. Jim French.
Paul Casanova was one.
Well, I was going to name him as the second guy. The other guy was Paul Casanova. And Casanova was the better of the two. But the thing about Casanova is it was very difficult to catch the ball he threw back because he threw the ball harder back than you threw the ball to home plate. That's how hard he threw the ball. I always told him, I said, you're in the wrong place. You should be pitching. You got the greatest arm I've ever seen in my life. Why don't you go pitch? He said, because then I am so bad I can't throw strikes. I said, you throw one strike after another in nine innings. But, boy, he was something when he threw the ball. Listen, I pitched to, I think, the best catcher for 10 or 12 years in the major leagues. That was Bill Freehand. Because he was even more than a player. He was a student of the game. He was a professor of the game.
Right.
The guy knew everything about everybody.
But that was what I was going to ask you, because Freehand, I think, clearly was the best catcher of his time. He wasn't the best defensive catcher on the Detroit Tigers.
He was. The problem.
Mike Rourke was said to be much better.
Mike Rourke wasn't any better. He wasn't even close to Freehand. Mike Rourke was a very nice man. I mean, listen, Mike couldn't hit his weight out of the batter's box.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. But Freehand played the game in all aspects. He understood the game. He understood the nature of the pitchers that were pitching to him all the time. And he always had one thing: never get beat by the best hitter on the other ball club. There are times you had a pitch to that guy, but seldom would you ever get beat by that guy. And, you know, it's a hell of a way to go through a ball game. But if you paid attention the way he paid attention, you very seldom found yourself in that corner.
Freehand did not have a great arm. Do you feel he crossed you?
No, I agree with you. He had great hands, but he had great hands. He got rid of the ball quickly. But unfortunately, I think he was accurate maybe 50 or 60. I'm not talking about throwing people out. He was accurate 50, 60% of the time at getting the ball down there in a good area. But he just didn't get it there quick enough because, you know, he just didn't have the velocity behind the ball.
Very sad story, too.
He's a catcher.
He's suffering Alzheimer's and has been sick for many, many years. And great guy, Bill Freehand. Okay, again, you want to contact us, 760-89-BALLS. Leave us a voicemail message. You can text that number and write something to us, or you can go to asknofilter@gmail.com. This is No Filter. We are, again, part of the
Didn't you want to give Drew Lane a plug for his show? Tell people that Drew's on the air where they can listen to him.
Right. We are in his basement. Red Shovel Network is our show. His show, Charlie Duff and ML Ulrich of TV2 has started a show. But yes, it is the Drew and Mike podcast. Go to drewandmikepodcast.com and you will listen to their show, which is number one in Michigan by a large margin. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Denny, enjoy the sun. You too, Bob. And I'll put my warm clothing on and I will face the remaining days of a Michigan winter that hopefully will end soon enough.
Until May 1st. What's
Bob, you got enough money for dinner maybe Tuesday night or Wednesday night?
Well, I'm hardly destitute.
Well, I didn't mean
to. You're looking for a free meal?
Destitute.
Yeah, why don't you drive across the state? Why don't you drive across the street and take Denny out to dinner? I think that's what he's suggesting.
No, I'll drive down there. I'll buy him dinner.
Oh, you're coming 3.5 hours down to West Palm Beach?
Aren't you a friend?
Wow. I'm so glad.
Okay, enough already.
For you to stay.
Say goodbye, boys. Say goodbye. See you guys
later. Have a great day, boys.
All right. Bye-bye.